That's good.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the History on the Rocks podcast. This is your host, Cody, and joining me, my wife, Audrey.
Hello. Well, what an entrance there.
Told you. They're going to get different every week. I don't know.
Got to mix it up.
You got to mix it up. So how was your Mother's Day?
It was wonderful.
Yeah. Did you have a good day?
I did. Yes. Good. It was a relaxing morning. Baby took a good nap.
Always nice.
And then we enjoyed the outside. Got a good meal at Maple and Hash.
Yes, Maple and Hash in Pingree Grove and West Dundee.
Yeah. Oh, it's so good.
West Dundee now. It is a wonderful brunch place. And they have
delicious,
wonderful cocktails and mimosas.
I went Saturday and Sunday.
So if you're in the Chicago suburban area or the Chicago area, it doesn't matter. If you want to take a drive out a little further to either Pingree Grove or West Dundee, we highly recommend Maple and Hash.
Definitely.
What are you drinking?
I'm drinking a Sauvignon Blanc.
Sauvy B. Off the bench.
Had to kill the bottle.
Yeah. Well, I'm drinking a fun concoction. So our friend Kendall and our friend Saunders.
Ryan.
They go up to Minocqua, Wisconsin, and they get this blackberry flavored whiskey.
It's so good.
Yeah. The distillery is called Drewson, and this is called the Black Lab Berry. Black Lab Berry, like our dog, Oakley.
Yeah. I think that's why she got it for us in the first place.
Yeah, I think so too. And it's flavored, but it's pretty darn good. And I'm mixing it with lemonade right now, and it is delicious.
I feel like I can't think of something else that it would mix well with. Like, lemonade just fits right with, like, the flavor.
Yeah, lemonade is definitely, I think, the mixer for this.
I mean, like, maybe you could do a Sprite, but... Yeah.
Good, probably. I should try it with Sprite to see what that tastes like. Mixing a little bit of lemon lime with blackberry probably wouldn't be bad. But all in all, like, you can still drink that straight.
Yeah.
Like, it's pretty darn good.
That's good.
Flavored like that. But if you're ever up in Minocqua, Wisconsin, Drewson Black Lab Berry, they also have, like, regular whiskey too, not flavored.
Yeah, I think she said she got other ones. Northern Waters Distillery, bourbon, a rye, a wheat.
Yes, produced and bottled by Northern Waters Distillery in Minocqua.
Hmm. Yeah, they have a bunch of different ones. Oh, they got rum, gin, moonshine. Oh, there's a flavored one. There's a Fox Red. Oh, she was telling us about that.
Fox Red.
Yeah. Looks just like Oakley on the bottle.
Yeah, it's a cute pup.
Vodka. Yeah, lots of different
lots
stuff.
Lots of different spirits.
Spirit.
From up north. Well.
Let's get into
today's episode, because I don't know. I'm just going to call this part one because, like I said, this might be another series we can do over time, just like common phrases. But our series that I want to start today, and I'm, again, calling it part one, is Ridiculous Battles. These are fun.
Yeah, I'm excited to hear about, not necessarily the first one, but the second one I'm a little more intrigued about.
Yeah, the second one today is really funny. The first one's even pretty good. I picked it because when I read it, it has to do with alcohol. So we're talking about two ridiculous battles today. One in Europe, one down under in Australia. Yeah, down under. We'll start with the first one, and that is the Battle of Carinthebes, which is in Romania. And this is a story that involves drinking.
Woohoo! We like that.
Not a big woohoo when we get to the end of this one.
Okay.
Okay, so the Austro-Turkish War took place from 1787 to 1791. And this is because of a ongoing border dispute between the Holy Roman Empire and the Ottoman Empire. The Ottomans had controlled much of Western Asia and Northern Africa at this time, as well as parts of Southeastern Europe. The Holy Roman Empire, on the other hand, was trying to expand Austrian influence throughout Europe. The Holy Roman Empire also had an alliance with Russia and Catherine the Great, who the Ottoman Empire also declared war on in 1787. So the Ottomans are kind of taking their fight to different parts of Europe.
Who's Catherine the Great?
Catherine the Great is part of Russia.
Oh, okay. We were talking the other day about, or it was yesterday, what history classes I took in high school. Like, I took U.S. history, psychology, and women's studies, and survey, which we kind of talked about was like a current events type of class. I don't think I ever took like a world history.
You didn't take
class.
World history like your sophomore year?
No, I looked at my transcript. I only had U.S. history, women's studies, and psychology. So I don't know. I missed something along the way, apparently. And in college, I had to take like an art class. I was kind of historical, but I did not pay attention in that class, like ever. So,
oh, you—that's why you have me now.
Yeah. So I'm learning a lot.
Yeah, the Catherine the Great is the Empress of Russia during this time. So instead of an emperor, she is the Empress.
Okay.
So again, the Ottomans have declared war on her and Russia, as well as now going to war with the Holy Roman Empire. The Holy Roman Empire, who is trying to expand this Austrian influence, because the Austrian Empire, as we'll see down the road, is what's involved in World War I. So Joseph II is the Emperor of Habsburg. He took this opportunity to put his name in the history books and lead his troops into battle against the Ottomans. Now, beating the Ottomans in a battle would be a huge accomplishment for anyone leading an army.
Mm-hmm.
So Joseph II, he takes this opportunity, but he has very little battle experience. But still, troops from all around the empire gathered in Belgrade to form this giant coalition army.
Okay.
So a coalition army is obviously military members from multiple countries coming together in one alliance.
Mm-hmm.
A malaria breakout occurred during this convergence of troops, leading to tremendous losses, but still Joseph wanted to move forward against the Ottomans with the troops that he had. Again, rushing to make his name and make his mark on history with a hopeful battle against the Ottomans. He led his troops into what is modern-day Hungary to pick out a strong defensive position. Now, this diverse army of the Holy Roman Empire was composed of troops from everywhere, including Austria, Romania, Croatia, Italy, and Serbia. So a lot of different groups here.
Mm-hmm.
So you can imagine how easy things could go wrong with these types of like language barriers and misleading context, trying to communicate with each other. So you have all these different languages and cultural groups, ethnic groups, that are coming together to fight one war together, and things can really get out of hand quick because of a breakdown in communication.
For sure.
So as the army camped near the city of Kerencsébes in Hungary, the Hungarian light cavalry crossed over the Danube River to scout out Ottoman troops' positions. However, they did not find any Ottoman troops. What they found was a group of gypsies who were selling liquor.
Oh.
Mm-hmm. So instead of going back to camp, these men stopped and indulged in some drinks, and began to pretty much have a party with these gypsies.
Sounds like a good time.
Yeah. After some time, there was infantry soldiers from the Holy Roman Empire that came across and ran into this drunk group of the cavalry soldiers, and they wanted in on the party, right?
Yeah, why not?
Hey, we're here with you guys.
Yeah.
But the cavalry soldiers denied them.
Oh.
Pretty much said, hey, go back to camp. Get out of here.
Rude.
They argued, a fist fight occurred, and then there was a shot that rang out in the dark. Someone had fired a weapon.
Oh.
Yeah. Obviously, you're not supposed to mix drinking and guns. That's
not a thing. It's illegal.
Yes. So, back at Kerencsébes at the camp, the army heard the shots from over the river, and they thought, holy crap, it must be the Turks, you know, who weren't supposed to arrive until that morning. Someone shouted, and I'm going to pronounce this as best I can in Romanian. I'm guessing it's Turci. I don't know. It's Turcii. I don't speak Romanian, obviously. But in Romanian, that is the word for Turks, which is the Ottoman Empire.
Mm-hmm.
The drunk cavalrymen remount their horses, and the infantry ran with them to return back to the camp. Back in Kerencsébes, there was so much confusion as to what was really happening. As a drunken group crossed back over the river, a German soldier shouted halt, which means stop in German. Mm-hmm. I know that one. But for some reason, it sounded like Allah, which is God in Arabic.
Oh, no.
So, like, halt, yeah. Allah, like, someone yeah. heard that Al sound.
Someone misinterpreted.
Right, and with all the chaos that's happening with these soldiers running back to camp after the shots fired and everyone's freaking out, it sounds like Allah for those who don't speak German. Now, all hell breaks loose, and the soldiers at the camp start firing at the men that are returning to the camp.
Oh, no.
And so, this caused the Austrian army to start fighting itself.
Oh, whoops.
At the end of the night, after this mayhem stopped and they finally figured out that they were fighting each other, there were 10,000 soldiers who were either dead or injured.
Oh, my God. That's a lot.
It gets worse for them.
Okay.
2 days later, the Turks arrive in town to no defenses and took control of Karen Siebes without a fight.
Because they were all dead or hurt.
They pretty much did.
Oh, no.
They pretty much did the Ottomans, the Turks' jobs for them.
Yeah.
With this drunken mishap and
pretty
misunderstanding.
Too much.
And again, this language barrier and hearing different things caused this mayhem.
Oh, man.
Now, it's a good story, but it has some holes in it, and there's contention amongst many historians who have researched this,
mm-hmm.
right? Some say that this never happened, that this was never
a thing,
a situation. It was 40 years after the Austro-Turkish War that it was actually recorded.
Okay.
So they think that it might have gotten, like, you know, like the telephone game.
Yeah, for think, sure.
Like, the story might have changed over those 40 years, and then someone wrote the history of it and was like, oh, this sounds
this
like
is,
a good
yeah.
story, right?
This is what happened.
Other historians say that this event was hearsay, that it was just passed down through oral histories until it was finally written.
Mm.
So, again, this is very contested, finding any proof that this story happened how we just told it. But it's still funny enough and good enough for this podcast.
It is. And, like, I mean, I don't know. The realist in me is, like, 10,000 soldiers. Like, you didn't figure it out sooner than that. Like, come on. But, I mean. I don't know.
Yeah. I can see how, like, friendly fire could quickly
escalate.
start to escalate as you're just firing in the dark.
Yeah. And especially at night.
I thought that was a funny story,
that
though.
That is funny.
And just kind of, you know, fit the podcast bill.
Yeah.
For, you
get
know,
drunk and do something stupid.
Get drunk
stupid.
And do something stupid. Like, start a podcast and hope people listen to you. All right. Now, our second story.
I'm excited about this.
This
one.
One's hysterical.
I'm looking forward to hearing about this.
This one's hysterical.
My wine is from down under, but New Zealand.
Oh.
Not Australia.
So, not that, yeah. Still down there, but
still
not,
down
not
there.
Australia. Yes. Our next story is called The Great Emu War. And in 1932... the Australian military went to war against one of its own national symbols, the emu. And shockingly enough, they lost. Yes, you heard me right. The Australian military was defeated by
emus. Oh my gosh. So how did this happen?
Right. Now, emus have not always been a great symbol to the people of Australia. In fact, they were actually seen the same as Americans would see like a rabbit or other pests that tear apart our gardens and our farmland.
Well, these are much bigger than a rabbit.
Yes, but they do the same thing, in, you know, in ripping yeah. up the soil and eating your crops and that kind of stuff where you're like...
Yeah, it's a big bird.
Trying to smack Bugs Bunny with a newspaper. The emu actually threatened the livelihood of Australian farmers in the early 1900s. So the government took drastic measures to handle the emu issue and called in the military for help. And this is how the Great Emu War began.
Like, what was their, like, mindset of what the military was going to do?
They were going to fire massive machine guns.
And just kill them all.
And kill them all, yes.
Okay.
Yes, that's exactly what they're going to do. And there
was an animal control.
There's a video. Yeah, pretty much. There's a video up on our website right now. On this Ridiculous Battles Part 1 page that you can go look at. Fox Network was an up-and-rising motion picture company at the time. And they had news crews on the ground, and you can see the Australian military firing Lewis machine guns from World War I trying to kill these emu.
Oh my God.
But we'll get there.
Okay.
So to understand this Great Emu War, we have to go back and look at the First World War and Australia and kind of get the context here. Australia during World War I had less than 5 million people living in the country, and I put / continent. Right? Because it's its own country continent.
Mm-hmm. That I do know.
Yes. There you go. First grade
geography. Yeah, I was going to say, that I do remember from like elementary school.
World War I was the largest war the Australians had ever been a part of. Not to mention it took place halfway around the world from them. Like, literally, you think Australia's, like, closer to things, and then you go
it
pull up
so
Google Earth,
far.
And it's so far away. Just floating there in the Pacific.
Well, it's, like, not even just looking at a map, but knowing how long a flight is to get there.
Yeah. It's like, what, 19 hours?
I want to say it's more than that.
With a stop in San Francisco or LA?
Well, yeah, you have
for
to.
Us.
You would, yeah.
Or Phoenix.
Yeah, I don't know. It's far.
Yeah. Well, during the Gallipoli campaign, around 210,000 Australians were counted as casualties, with around 62,000 of them dying from their wounds or being killed.
Whoa.
Mm-hmm. Now, as veterans from the war returned back to Australia with debilitating injuries, the Australian government had no plan for helping them. The Australian public pressured their government to do something to aid these returning soldiers. So the government came up with this. The plan was to help the soldiers and feed the people of Australia. In the countryside, the western part of the continent, small plots of land were designated for veterans to live on, and they were encouraged to become farmers.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah, not really, because the soil was terrible.
Oh.
And farming would not be an easy task for thousands of returning soldiers who took on this challenge. The other problem was that their plots were only 10 acres, which is barely anything to even make a profit on.
Oh, yeah, that's not a lot of land.
No. So around 5,000 veterans settled in Western Australia, where the conditions were good enough to grow wheat in their fields. And wheat is not a very expensive crop.
Mm-hmm.
You can grow a crap ton of wheat and make very little money.
Mm.
Now, this is where the emu problem starts to occur. So according to sources used for this transcript, the Australian government has this kind of love-hate relationship with emus, right? They were once classified as vermin, then nationally protected, and then reclassified as vermin, and so on. In 1918, the emu began to flood the Western Australian farms, and in 1922, they were classified as vermin that needed to be taken out.
Oh.
Farmers tried to get emu to relocate by shooting at them, but they soon realized that it would take multiple shots for an emu to even realize it was hit by a firearm.
Oh my God.
Yes. So, like, these giant birds, flightless
can't
birds,
be killed.
Are running around on two legs, being hit multiple times, and they're like
living.
They're like someone on LSD who just keeps coming at you as you shoot at them, because they can't feel it.
Oh my gosh! Well, they say they're like dinosaurs.
Yeah, well,
they're
probably
like prehistoric.
Oh my God! Don't even get JMO started. I can't. Even though the emu were pests, the farms were atrocious, leading to high poverty and suicide levels among these veterans that had now settled in these farm areas.
Yeah.
Australia then felt the impact of the U.S. Great Depression, followed by a long drought. Unemployment rose to 32% in Australia during this time.
Not good.
No, not good. So very unfortunate circumstances all happening at once.
Yeah.
Now, this drought had pushed wildlife to different parts of the country. This led about 20,000 emu to relocate in the western part of Australia, where they depended on the water sources and run down farms just to survive, right? They're creatures that have to adapt, so
yep,
they did.
For sure.
20,000 emu.
That's a lot.
20,000.
Oh, and I hate birds.
Yeah.
At least these ones don't, like, fly around, but... Ugh.
I guarantee you, you would hate these birds, too.
I'm sure I would.
On November 2nd...
Pecking.
At least it's not like an alpaca that'll, like, spit on you. I'm pretty sure an emu has killed... I want to look at this stat now. How many emu have killed people?
Well, I feel like there is that one bird in Jurassic Park. Like, that... I'm thinking of a scene, and it looks just like an emu. It's just pecking.
Yeah. I mean, scientists have even said that through evolution that birds are pretty much dinosaurs.
Yeah, and emus are the closest to them.
The velociraptor.
Yeah, but no, I don't, is that what I'm thinking of?
No, no, no way. Are you talking about the thing that sprays the
maybe
poison out of it?
Maybe, yes.
And the things
and
come out?
Ooh, yes, that is what I'm thinking about.
And that's just reminding me of Friends when Ross does that. Yeah, like that, yeah, that's... I think that's what you might be talking about.
I think that's what is in my mind. I haven't seen the movie in a long time, but
yeah.
I can picture something.
Pecking.
Like an emu.
Pecking
yeah,
your
pecking.
Eyes out.
That's what I'm going to dream about tonight. Cool.
Yeah. Quick story. When we were in Nashville last time, because we're going to Nashville in 2 weeks, Audrey had a panic attack watching the birds fly around the city.
I think I really did. I, like, struggled.
You struggled.
I think probably the alcohol didn't help, but, like, I was freaking out with all those birds flying around.
That was wild.
And I had to go home. Well, back to the hotel.
All right.
Anyway.
On November 2nd, 1932, the Australian military spotted... I gotta read this differently. On November 2nd, 1932, the Australian military spotted a large pack of emu in which they moved in to engage them.
Oh, it's so threatening.
So tense. They thought with the farmer's help that it would be easy to wrangle up the emu together and take them all down at once. Well, they were very wrong about that. The emu did the opposite. They scattered, making them difficult targets to hit, running at speeds of up to 40 miles an hour. And if you've ever shot a firearm, okay, hitting a moving object is not easy.
No.
Especially 40 miles an hour. That would be very tough, especially with what they're about to use in these.
And like,
to shoot these birds.
An emu is large, but it's large in only one area.
It's their big, fat
middle
section.
It's their belly area.
And that's what you have to hit.
Yeah.
Multiple times, because obviously they get hit once and they just keep going. Fucking A, man. That'd be wild. I can't even imagine that.
No, not at all. It's like a movie.
Oh, speaking of that, I also put on the website a spoof trailer. It must have been during COVID. These guys made a spoof trailer of this as an action movie. You have to go to our website and go to the episode page and watch it. It is so funny. It is amazing. These guys did a great job. Now, after this first engagement, I can't believe I'm talking about this like a war. After this first engagement with the emu, a second ambush was planned a few days later at a nearby dam. Because at the dam, the emu would come and drink the water there. They waited for a group of about 1,000 emu to show up.
Oh, God.
Now, they popped up again and began firing, but the Lewis machine gun they were using started to jam, and the emu again scattered to safety.
Oh, jeez.
Now, after a couple days of trying to take down the emu, it was estimated that only 30 of them out of the 20,000 had been killed.
That's nothing.
That's
absolutely
not
nothing.
I don't even think that's like a sizable fraction.
No. There's a fraction to it, but it's not sizable.
That's just wild. That's just wild. Okay, so now as the attempts to ambush the emu continued to fail, the birds began to travel in smaller packs and had a lookout to warn the group of danger. These birds are adapting.
Yeah.
That's terrifying. That is freaking terrifying.
Oh my God.
I'm going to read that again just so people believe me. As the attempts to ambush the emu continued to fail, the birds began to travel in smaller packs and had a lookout to warn the group of danger.
It's like a wolf pack.
So now picture this in your mind. These emus are getting together and they're like, hey, dude, these guys are shooting at us.
When you hear that loud bang.
Yeah. What we should do, though, is we should travel in only like packs of six, right? So that they don't know who to aim at. And then, you know, Harry, you're going to go on the top of the fucking hill and you're going to yell at us when you see the guys coming with the guns.
Yeah.
And they were like, okay, break. The men had a new idea. Hold the machine gun on the back of a truck to drive alongside the emu to match their speed.
That's smart.
No, it's not.
Okay.
Just because you're driving at the same speed of something, right, and you shoot a firearm, you have to aim in front of it to hit it at the point it's going to be.
That's true.
And it's milliseconds.
Yeah.
If you're going to shoot right at a bird, right alongside it, the bullets are going to go past it to behind it.
You got a timer, right?
Correct. So, again, like, yeah, sounds like a good idea, but again, 1932, you have to know how to do that with a Lewis machine gun, which is about my wingspan long, which is about... Well, I guess my wingspan's definitely over 5 feet, but Lewis machine gun's about 5 feet long, and it either sits on a bipod, or if you watch the video, there's two guys holding it.
Yeah,
one guy's aiming
in
the front, and the other guy's pulling the trigger in the back.
Yeah, that would be... Yeah, that's hard to do.
Yeah.
If you had, like, an AR, okay. You could do it driving, but...
No ARs in 1932.
Obviously, I know that.
Okay, just making sure you knew that. So, this also proved ineffective, as the terrain was actually too rough to be accurate off the truck. So, not just the inertia of moving, but I don't even know if inertia was the right word, but it definitely sounded right as I said it. So, science people, let me know if inertia was the right word or not on that one.
Yeah, couldn't help with that.
It's when something moves. Like, the Earth has inertia, it moves. So, I don't know.
Okay.
Sounded good.
We've got, like, math in here. We've got science. We have history. Okay.
Just hitting it all.
Yeah.
But, again, the terrain is too rough. So, like, they're bouncing. Mm-hmm. The gun's bouncing. You can't shoot accurately anyway.
Yeah.
In another attempt, they had the farmers wrangle the birds again and took a truck and just ran the birds over.
Well, that would be fun.
Desperate times, desperate measures, right? Yeah, literally just taking, you know, like a Ford, you know, when they were back in the day,
little truck.
When they were made out of actual metal and not, you know, aluminum. Yeah, just ran the bird over.
Hmm.
One emu went through the windshield, getting its head stuck in the steering wheel, which made the driver freak out and crash into a tree.
Oh my God, that would be me. I would freak out.
How do you not read that and just right in your head see a cartoon of that?
Yeah. Totally.
I'm thinking like Looney Tunes or some shit when I'm reading that. After 6 days of failure after failure, they only killed 300 birds.
Again, not a sizable fraction.
Nope. They only multiplied their first kill of 30 by 10.
300 more will be born real soon.
Yeah, 100%. The government ends up withdrawing the military due to the bad press and poor performance.
Poor performance.
Imagine having that on your military track record. Could not take down flightless birds.
It's awful.
I'm not making fun of Australians at all, but this is just ridiculous. On November 13th, the military was back in Western Australia to try one more time. This time around, it was recorded that they had killed around 950 emu with a machine gun and another 2,500 counted dead after dying from injuries.
Okay, we're getting there. Still not
This is
still
roughly
good.
10% of the total emu population they set out to destroy.
Yeah, that's not enough.
It wasn't 10% in one attempt. It was 10% in about three
or
four attempts.
I would say three or four.
So you do the math. How long is it going to take to take out the other 90%?
A long time.
Yeah. Okay.
And they're just going to repopulate. So it's really just going to be a circle.
This gets so much better. just listen. Listen to this next line. Over time, the emu destroying the farms was solved with barrier fencing.
Put a fence up.
Oh, shit. Why didn't we think to do that?
I wasn't even thinking about that.
No.
At all.
No, you weren't. Because you were just thinking the wild plains of Western Australia and these birds running loose and a bunch of guys trying to go shoot them.
But let's put up a fence.
Let's put up a barrier. And guess what?
Keep
the emu won't come in. If you can keep rabbits out of a garden, you can keep emu out of a farm.
But, like, you really can't keep rabbits out of a garden. They really know
they
how to get
holes.
In there.
They dig holes.
Yeah, they know how to get.
You show me an emu sneaking through a hole.
They're not going to.
I'd be
impressed.
And
they're flightless. And I don't think they can hop over a fence.
I was
going
to say, do they jump? I don't know anything about emu.
I mean, I know enough. They're pretty smart.
They're pretty smart.
And unkillable.
They learn to travel in smaller packs and have a lookout.
Yeah.
That's smarter than half the humans on this planet.
That's very true.
In 1999, a truce was signed to end the Great Emu War.
Truce.
And make them a protected species once again.
I wonder who signed that one.
The Australian president. There were no emu present to sign the treaty, but they were once again a national symbol of Australia.
That is hilarious. And I really don't read ahead because you answered my question that there were no emu present to sign it.
That was your question?
Yeah, I said who signed it. There were no emu present. To sign the treaty.
The fact that you... Okay, the fact that you're saying this like you think emu would have been there to sign it anyway.
Well, of course they wouldn't.
Okay,
God.
I don't know.
I mean, they should have brought one on a leash.
That would have been hysterical.
You are now protected.
Yeah. Like, please peck this treaty. And they put, like, ink on its beak. And just have him peck the... And it's like signed with their beak.
Oh, man.
That'd be so cool. I would put all those like old 1930s pictures up in a museum with like that doctrine.
Yeah.
And be like, you cannot go to war with the emu again.
That's funny.
That's funny as hell. When I saw that, I was really just like, I was dying laughing because I was like, this is the most ridiculous thing I've ever read. And a lot of like I didn't do a lot of research, obviously. It's a short story. But what I did read, they wrote it like it was like a real big conflict.
I mean, it's a pretty big conflict.
No, but I'm telling
like...
you, they wrote it as in two countries were fighting each other. Not that like guys were running around trying to kill birds. And that made it even more entertaining to read. But you guys, you have to go see the videos on the
Yeah, I have to watch the spoof still. But
oh, the spoof video is fantastic. And it reminds me of like the Indiana Jones trailers. It's just so good. And then go check out the Fox Network.
Yeah, that's
news
crazy.
Video of the actual emu war. Like, you're going to see these, like, this actual news footage in black and white of these guys loading up Lewis machine guns and firing. It's just so funny. Oh my God. Can't make this shit up.
No, this one you can't. Maybe the first one's made up.
The first one, it might be. I don't know. Again,
has video footage.
This has video footage, and this is a real story. So, I mean, look out for the emu in Australia when you go. You never know.
Yeah, be careful.
I mean, it's about to be the 30s again, the 2030s, and they might have been waiting 100 years for their revenge. So 2032, look out for their 100-year anniversary of the Great Emu War, and they might attack again.
Yikes.
Put your barriers up.
Yeah, make sure you have a fence.
Make sure you have a fence. Well, that was fun. Those are two good ones.
Those are.
What are we going to talk about next week? Oh, next week we're going to talk about... Actually, we're going to do Ridiculous Conflicts again next week. But it's because I had four stories and I split them up.
Yeah.
To keep our episodes a little shorter, because again... Getting really good feedback from people liking the 30-minute ones than the longer ones. They're easier to listen to, obviously. However, next week we're going to talk about how a stray dog caused a conflict.
Okay.
Yep. Between Greece and Bulgaria.
Oh. Okay.
Yep. And then we're going to talk about how the United States and Canada almost went to war over a pig being shot.
Oh, no. Bacon.
Yep, it was shot and killed.
Canadian bacon.
That's ham. Yep, it's just ham. But yes, two good stories next week. So make sure you come back next Thursday and join us for a couple more ridiculous conflicts. It'll be a good time.
Sounds interesting.
Yep. Don't forget to head over to our Facebook, Instagram, like, follow, share. We're going to add, I've been adding more and more content to those, spreading some word. Our t-shirts are in. They are done.
What?
Yep.
Nice.
Emily got them done. She emailed me the other day.
Oh, cool.
So they will be arriving shortly, which is great because we'll have some merch. And we still have plenty of stickers.
Cool.
Well, thank you all again for listening to the History on the Rocks podcast. We hope you have a great weekend. Go sit back, relax, have a couple drinks, and we'll see you next week.
I'm ready. See ya. Have a good weekend. Cheers.
Cheers.